You're not going to sing
right
now.
I must love being an attorney to get music like that. It's got to be a lot of fun.
I actually have it in my, I pipe it out of my briefcase when I walk in the courtroom. It's just kind of an effect I do.
And you strut?
Yeah, just kind of that strut. Swagger.
Well,
stroll.
Welcome to the strutting,
saunter.
Swaggering, strolling, swag. What was the last
saunter.
One? Sauntering. Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense. Today's sports law segment on 105 The Ticket, brought to you by Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock Systems. If you need to drive, they can help. And Marsh, this we talk a little bit about this Aaron Hernandez. It's
no, we have bigger announcements.
Oh no, excuse me. Do you
this
have a major
huge.
Announcement?
Ahead,
give him some.
Here we go.
Please, I apologize. I don't know what I was thinking.
Okay, this is just public service. Sometimes there are things more important than sports. I know it's hard to imagine Hellboy.
Well, this is sports related.
Yeah, it is true. It's very sports related. But today, I don't know, Hellboy, if you knew this, today is National Beer Day. Did you know that?
That's why I'm hammered right now.
I figured that. Yep. What happened is that, as we know, we went through Prohibition, and President Franklin Roosevelt, back on April 7th, 1933, passed the first step towards ending Prohibition, which was that you were allowed to brew beer in your own home. It had to be below 4% alcohol, and that was the first kind of opening for us to get back to being able to slop down our beer. So, big day. It's beer's the third most consumed liquid after water and tea. I thought you'd want to know that.
So below 4%?
Below 4%, and he had brewed at home.
What's that even going to do for you?
Well, he drank enough of it, you know.
And oh.
You could get that through you.
Well, what's the quantity thing?
What is the percentage of when you go to like a liquor, or not a liquor store, a food
strong,
store?
I don't know what strong
is. Two, right?
3% is 3.2.
2%?
3.2.
3.2 is cheap. Then the strong stuff is what?
The full count stuff.
Yeah, 6.8. I don't know what it is. What is strong beer? I don't even know what the level is.
I stick around the 5.5 to 6 range.
Are you there? Good.
And it's also darker beers.
And the corresponding thing for those that are not beer drinkers, or perhaps of the... are the stay-at-home people. National No Housework Day today also. So there's an overlap between these two, that national beer, you drink a lot of beer and you don't do any housework. So it sounds like a great day, actually.
That goes hand in hand.
Yeah, obviously.
Now, is there such a thing as 80-proof beer?
No.
That
would be called vodka.
It'd be called death. The way people just swill it down. Now... Okay, I thank you for that public service announcement, Counselor.
Okay.
Aaron Hernandez, it's with the jury now, right? They're both the prosecution and the defense have rested, and the jury has it.
Yep, they just got it to the opening. Closing statements happened this morning. Jury got this afternoon, so they'll be back by the end of the week.
Should be the end of the day, but
yeah.
What the defense attorney said today was this. Has this come up at all completely out of left field? And explain to him what he did. It was sort of like a...
surprise.
What do you call that in law when you hit him with something like that? That wakes you up.
Yeah. So what happened is that the defense attorney in the closing argument got up, instead of just basically saying, you know, my guy didn't do it and doesn't know anything about this, and the evidence doesn't prove he did it, he got up and said, Hernandez, my client, was at the murder. He was there. He saw it occur. And so all that evidence you have is consistent with him being present, but they haven't proven he's actually the one that killed Odin Lloyd. So, and I haven't checked, but I'm assuming there was no aiding and abetting charge or conspiracy charge that went with it, which would kind of be almost admitting to that if he somehow did it. But you could, you know, for example, if you just walked out here right now and all of a sudden Hellboy shot somebody, you go, well, I'm present, I saw it happen, but geez, I'm not guilty of anything. I wasn't a participant or didn't know it was going to happen. That's kind of maybe what his spin is here, to say, I didn't know it was going to happen, and we go from there. So that's kind of the pitch that's come out of this, but I'm really serious on this. Occasionally I've taught, not full semesters, but law school class here or there.
Yeah.
If I was teaching a extended class on evidence and criminal law and those things, I would use the Hernandez case as a teaching model. There are so many goofy things and strategic things that have come up through this case. I think it's a really good example for people to learn about the law and what goes on.
It also, now, for a murder trial, and you... I'm not going to presume. Have you? I know you've done a lot of major trials, but have you had many murder trials?
Yes. Yep.
Is this an average? Things seem to last forever.
No, they can. Part of this was the difficulties they had here is they did not have the murder weapon, this Glock that he was killed with, and they did not have any kind of a confession or anything else to tie this case together. So circumstantially, when you don't have a weapon and you don't have any eyewitnesses and it's all done circumstantially, it can take a lot longer to put. The prosecutor will always usually talk about, I'm going to build a puzzle for you during this or solve a puzzle for you during this trial. I'm going to give you 100 different pieces. You got to put them all together, and then each piece individually doesn't seem like a lot, but you put them all together at the end, and it's going to show a clear picture of Hernandez being the murderer in this case.
Well, I'm guessing you've talked about this case, and it seems like the case many attorneys would talk about with each other. Is it a slam dunk that he gets convicted, or is there a lot of doubt in your mind that he will be?
Well, I think the 2012, right? You know, even if he wins this, he doesn't get out of custody.
No.
He sits there. He's got a double murder from 2012. Yeah. He's going to trial on, and that case I think seems stronger for the state. The problem is circumstantially, it is a difficult case to have. They don't have a clear motive here for why he would do it, other than being ticked off at the guy or whatever. So it's a challenging case. I think this is a good strategy for him to say, look, you may well think in the bottom of your stomach here that this guy did it, but that's not the burden of proof. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. And, yeah, they got a lot of stuff to throw out here, but it's bad, you know.
Would you call it, and talking to Marsh Hallberg, Hallberg Criminal Defense, would you call what the defense attorney did brilliant? And here's why I ask that question, because that is now the last thing in their mind. Wait a minute. He was there. They're admitting he was there, but he didn't pull the trigger. I mean, does that give you, is he trying to really push the reasonable doubt by saying that?
Yeah, well, I think it's the old one. Necessity is the mother of invention. So he has to invent a strategy here going into closing, because through necessity, they've locked down pretty tightly through the video that showed Hernandez, you know, at the gas station, I think soon before this, with that. You had this guy, Alexander Bradley, who testified last week, who said he'd seen Hernandez with the Glock. He'd seen that he had a safe that he stored a gun in and drugs in. And the speculation is that's the box that the fiance threw out. And since she didn't know what was inside the box, that had the Glock in it. There's kind of a reasonable argument to be made that that's not unreasonable to think that happened. So it got so tight on Hernandez that he was clearly with the people who did it. If he didn't do it, he knew about it, perhaps had the murder weapon, all those kinds of things, that he had to come up with some strategy to, on a technical argument, right? You think he was there, you may have known about it, but they haven't proven it.
It's just a
sad situation, right? Again, I just get so frustrated with people in life that have such an opportunity, given this God's skill of athleticism that I wasn't, blessed of us weren't, and had the opportunities given to them through great support of coaches and others to get into a pro team, whether it's football or something else, and you throw it away.
You have seen it, and I've certainly seen it with people I know and athletes. People are self-destructive because some people, the way they grew up, they do not feel they deserve to be successful and not to screw up. And some of them, though, in his case, he might have think that he could do anything he wants. He's an athlete.
Just the opposite.
That's the other thing. It goes both ways.
Yeah, it's
nobody will catch me. Hey, they need me over on the pay. Well, I joked about it when they won the Super Bowl, but half joked about it.
Yeah.
You know everybody on that jury is a Patriots fan.
Yeah.
Well, they all know that they don't need Aaron Hernandez to win a Super Bowl now.
Yeah.
Had they lost, I think his chances of being, walking free would have been better.
Yeah. And you wonder how many of them knew about, they weren't allowed to talk about the 2012 murder because they said you can't show a correlation between that. The theory back then was one of the reasons he had killed Lloyd, at least the government tried to argue, is he killed Lloyd because he had told Lloyd he had done the 2012 murders. And so he had a murder of Odin Lloyd because he knew about it. But they couldn't ever, that was just a theory. Kind of a cool theory, but nothing to hang their hat on, so the judge didn't let him do that. They also didn't let this Bradley guy testify that Hernandez had shot him in the face either. So this guy testifies at trial, and his face is all deformed, of course, because he's been shot in the face, this Alexander Bradley guy, and they just talk around. Nobody ever brings it up. They never explain it.
I heard about the guy. Here's what's amazing to me. You can't talk about it, but how do you sit there after what he has done to you and don't just blurt out, he did this to my face?
Yeah.
Oh, disregard that.
Yeah, oops.
That's stricken from the record. Well, you can't strike it from their minds.
No, and that's sometimes, there's times where you you don't mind things come out because, like I said, unless it's really a major problem, a judge isn't going to start a multi-week murder trial.
Okay, let me ask you that. Marsh Hallberg, Hallberg Criminal Defense. Not you, of course, because you wouldn't do it, but how often have you seen attorneys ask the question knowing that the judge will say,
oh, absolutely,
that never happened, stricken from the record, because you know you want to plant it in the minds of the jurors. Every trial?
Virtually every trial. Yeah. Virtually every trial. You will get that out there. An objection, sustained, strike that from the record, but the jury's already heard it. And that's why sometimes having a trial just to a judge alone, you don't worry about those issues as much.
Now, what's the average number of, when you're a defense attorney now, the average number of prosecutors, is it one or two, or how many they have on their side? if it's a, somebody who is actually your the other lawyers, prosecutors, or
yeah, what about
how many are there on that at the table? On the
when you try a case.
When you try a case.
Well, a lot of times it's only one or two, and sometimes you're really concerned about that from a defense standpoint. You know, I can remember, like in the OJ trial, for example, gosh, you had like about five guys
sitting
at the bench. Well, juries don't like that. It looks like you're buying justice. You got a bunch of slick suits and everything else. So usually, strategically, you like to have one, maybe two, and the same with the government. And so you usually match up. If they got two, you'll take two and vice versa.
Okay.
So sometimes I'll start with two. The prosecution will add a second person because then they don't mind, but they don't want to look like they're double teaming on somebody. So you try to dummy it down.
The reason I ask that because I'm just wondering if you've had many cases where all the attorneys from the side jump up and say, "I object!" They just start screaming.
Well, what you do when you have more than one attorney that's helping you in trial, representing you, only one of them can pick per witness. So if, you're on the stand as a witness, I am the only one that gets to either question you or cross-examine you. My co-counsel can't jump in and have other questions. So you're assigned.
I knew that, but I meant just saying objects. It's such an outrageous thing to just pull. That'd be kind of my goal if I was an attorney, get them all pissy.
Yeah, go from there.
Now, explain to me, enough with the Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah.
Darren Sharper pled not guilty in New Orleans. Is that was that part of the plan, or is he suddenly trying to? Because that would be the longest sentence. They were going to stay part of it,
right?
But why would he just not say no contest or guilty?
Buying time. You know, they're just something fell apart that they had to get the whole package together on everything. They still needed more time to do that. The system, the judge wants to keep the case moving, so you simply enter a not guilty plea to go to the next
step. It'll never go to trial, though.
No, it's not going to happen.
So I think next month is when it's on the docket.
Can you imagine? Because you could bring in all the other victims, all the other evidence, what we call Spiegel evidence, again, other consistent bad acts. You could bring that in that trial, and that would be a brutal case for the defense.
Yeah. Now, we had talked, and I don't believe, Hellboy, have you seen anything on AP?
No, not yet.
Anything move on that? Because AP met with the commissioner today.
Yeah.
Presumably, they haven't been together for some tea and crumpets or some cake and coffee.
Yeah.
Just to get together, see what's going on.
And I'm sure everybody promised that no one was tape recording the meeting when they first went in because...
Well, AP was.
Well, because AP was smart enough, tricky enough, whatever, to record his conversations
before.
What
do you do if you're like the NFL after what he did to Troy Vincent?
Yeah.
One of the VPs of where he did tape record him on a phone.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you trust the guy's not taping? I guess you just keep it. Well, actually, you probably have a court stenographer there to get everything anyway.
Well, you specifically have it agreed to that this has not been recorded, and you have everybody agree to that fact. Now, could somebody lie and still record it, I suppose, but that's the way you usually do it.
And so, I mean, you could get away with it.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, what about, we've heard Ponzi schemes around here.
Yeah.
There's been a few of them. Former NFL defensive back Will Allen, charged by the Security and Exchange Commission with helping run a $32 million Ponzi scheme. It's a lot of money.
You know what a Ponzi scheme is, right? Hellboy? No?
Yes. Sounds really cool.
After I actually got named Ponzi, actually. So.
Yeah. Luciano Ponzi.
See, it's the big pyramid thing where you pay the guys at the front end, the guys the last coming in never get paid. You gotta take the money at the first guys that pay in get repaid at some point by later guys that come into the investment, and the bottom of the pyramid never gets paid.
And that's when you get caught, when it starts hitting to the bottom.
And that's what these are sometimes really like smart people, at least smart, book smart and whatever, and you know at some point the money's got to run out, but somehow a lot of times they think they can take the money they have, invest it, make great returns, and get everybody paid off and still have enough left for them.
That's what they convince themselves of.
Yeah, and then the real estate market goes away, the stock market goes away, and suddenly then we got no money to pay off everybody.
And also it's got to be too good to, when you're getting returns unheard of.
Yep. Yep.
Boy, he's good.
Yep.
Marsh Hallberg, Hallberg Criminal Defense. Today's Marsh Hallberg Sports Law segment on 105 The Ticket, brought to you by Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock Systems. If you need to drive, they can help. Marsh will stay with us. We got D-Bag. I do want to ask you about my leading candidate here. He was he's a college basketball coach.
Okay.
From a neighboring state. And he made, actually, he didn't just make one comment. He just was off. His team didn't do so well last night, so he had to rip players, he had to rip refs, and I want to ask you, one of them may not be, but one of them in my mind certainly is, and you as a, the only thing left, you've been a prosecuting attorney,
mm-hmm.
you've been a defense attorney,
yep.
Someday you're going to be a judge. You'll take Alan Page's spot on the Supreme
Court.
There
you go, okay.
That would be good. All right, we're going to come right back, little D-bag of the day when we return.
The Bob Sansevier Show, only on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. D-bag, D-bop, bop, D-bag.
We were talking, Marsh Hallberg, Hallberg Criminal Defense, and I, and Hellboy during the break about how, I mean, we know that college sports is big-time money, but throw some of these numbers out that you were sharing.
Well, when it really all started to go to hell in a handbasket, I think, is when CBS and Turner Broadcasting signed a 14-year contract for $10.8 billion, with a B, $1 billion for the broadcast rights for a 14-year contract. When that kind of insane money gets thrown into anything on this planet, it's going to cause everything else to change. And
except for the Gophers winning.
That's another thing we can talk about, how they are. I think the Gophers spend, I question where these numbers come from, but according to two different sites I saw, the Gophers supposedly spend the sixth most on the basketball program, everybody in the country, and didn't make it into the NCAA.
That has got to include, though, whatever money is going toward this new facility.
It's
got to
be.
Because where else would it go?
Well, Patino's only making around $1 million. It was interesting to look at his contract with it. I didn't know he got like $50,000 in private jet costs also as part of his contract. But he gets about $1 million for what he has. But it's just insane. So what it comes down to is for every... It gets into a really complicated thing, but the way the March Madness works is almost 85% of all the profit of the NCAA comes out of one tournament, out of the March Madness.
It's amazing.
85% out of one tournament. And each game is worth about, give or take, $1.5 million. Every game is worth about $1.5 million. So if you're Wisconsin and the championship game doesn't, they don't do it for that. I know what they don't want it there, but every other game, you're getting about $1.5 million a game. Each conference can choose how to take that money and what to do with it. Most conferences, including the Big Ten, take that money, throw it into a pot, and then split it equally between all the teams. So Northwestern, that's never, ever, ever been in the playoffs, they still get their equal share of that money. It's paid out over 6 years. They're called units. Each game is a unit. And so it's paid out over a period of 6 years for budgeting purposes. So the problem is the rich get richer. I believe 4 out of 6 of the last NCAA champions have all been in the 3 highest spenders. Connecticut's the exception. 3 highest spenders for their basketball programs. And so Fortune magazine had a good article today on this topic saying, is Coach K overpaid? $10 million is about 9 point whatever. He gets $10 million to coach basketball. The president gets about $1 million of the university.
Imagine what John Wooden would get.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you imagine? He was coaching today.
Insane. So, and the point is that Bo Ryan gets about a third of that. He gets about $3 million in his total package. So the argument is, did Wisconsin have a better bargain or better value? We pay $3 million, we get into the final championship game. Duke pays triple that. Granted, they win, but did they get that much farther? So,
if I was Bo Ryan, his team made the championship game, he's making $3 million. He shouldn't be so pissy afterward.
When you're 67, you have the right to be a little crotchety, don't you?
Yeah. Well, what he was crotchety about, he ripped the refs.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Some of that, okay.
All right. You could say, yes, there was some valid reasons. However, I would be much more upset with the refs if Okafor and Winslow didn't have the number of fouls that they had.
True.
And the one play at the end where it looked like the final couple of angles that they showed that Justin Winslow touched the ball with his fingertip when it went out of bounds. I don't think when they went over, they saw those were able, because we saw them late. They didn't have them for CBS right away.
Right.
So I think that they saw earlier ones. And even that, I don't know that they could be absolutely sure that it looked like his finger bent a little. But even so, it had to be absolute zero doubt to it.
Have you ever been a ref ever? I mean, it is. I only did a little bit, but it is the toughest.
Well,
job
just
in
like
the world.
When you're coaching and reffing kids, the little kindergartners.
But you get the parents go berserk. You go, I'm doing the best I can here. You know, nobody's perfect. I mean, it's part of the game a little bit, I think.
Well, I told you when my son was in kindergarten, and you know they're playing kindergarten basketball, and one of the moms was a ref, and I realized I got to go sit down because the kids were running with the ball and not dribbling. And then the kid ran out of bounds and ran in. I said, "The kid ran out of bounds carrying the ball." I said, "What am I doing?
I'm
yelling at some kid's kindergarten mom."
Yeah.
So that's when I never said another word. And I would be, if I allowed myself, a horrible little league parent.
No, it'd be tough.
So I don't say a word when I watch a game and cover it. Because I could care less.
You know, I'd be interested if anybody wanted to call in and see if they think we're paying too much in sports. I mean, I think objectively, everybody says absolutely academics should be most important. We're spending, you spend $1 million on the president of a whole university, but you'll spend 10 times that on just a basketball coach.
Let's go. Well, somebody's on the phone now.
Chad and Blaine.
Chad, how are you? Hey, Chad.
Good, guys. Good, good.
What's so cooking?
I got to eat a little crow today. And, you know, I admit when I'm wrong. And, Bob, you're right. I was wrong.
As usual.
You're a better team. So, had to call in and give you some props for the good pick. And, Marsh, you continually do a great job. And, in regards to money, I mean, doesn't the TV deal push a lot of that? Because, I mean, look at what the Dodgers TV deal and even the Padres' new TV deal. I mean, those are just billions and billions of dollars.
But you could make an argument that this is based upon the whole strength of the entire Division One. I don't care if you're Northwestern or you're Kentucky or you're Duke. You could make at least a plausible argument to say all the teams in Division One should share to some extent in all of this money. Because otherwise, you know, the rich just get richer. The ACC is going to make somewhere between $28 and $40 million in this tournament alone, just their conference. Now they're going to divide it up equally amongst their conference, but that's why conferences like that continue to stay so strong. So you get the money, great, but push some more of it back into academics or lower tuition for kids or whatever it is. But to constantly do this is real frustrating to me.
And absolutely.
And a correlating thing with that, Chad, for me is that I just saw too that there's a big move now for all of these top football coaches. They're not getting incentives in their contracts. It used to be you'd get a base salary of $1 million, $2 million, and then you'd get so much for each time you won your conference or got into the NCAA or you won the Final Four or whatever.
But isn't that
they
why
don't do
Maryland
that.
Joined the Big Ten was to get in with the Big Ten conference? Because with the TV network, I mean, don't they get like
exactly right?
Dollars?
You're right. So the rich get richer. So those conferences like an ACC or whatever that other teams want to get in there to get their percentage share of that revenue. So the stronger conferences keep getting stronger and stronger, and they're more desirable to get in.
So why can't the Ivy League put together a TV network?
They could.
We'd want to watch it.
Right. Well, I mean. Well, I'm just saying. I mean, they could do it too.
Yeah, but again, who'd want to watch it? Hey, Chad, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Bo Ryan is a D-bag of the day. But you tell me, I want to know from you and Marsh, why is he a bigger D-bag for saying that Duke does the renter player deal or because he ripped the refs?
I would have to go with the rent the refs.
Rent the player.
Not the rent the player. I mean, these players have that choice. You know, I that's just my opinion. I mean, I think college players need to be in college for at least 2 years, and that way the NBA can, you know, make a better decision on evaluating some of these younger players.
You know what, though? These players, if they want to come out, some of them will flourish, others will disappear. It's their choice. I mean, they're 18 or 19. I mean, they want to come out. You know what? If it doesn't work, get a job like the rest of us.
Absolutely. Makes sense.
So I have no problem. And by the way, Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, got a little upset with the rent-a-player comments, pointing out that they have one of the great schools in the world. When we recruit a young man, we recruit a young man because of three things. One, he has the academic potential to do well at Duke. Two, he has the talent to do well. And three, he has great character. All the guys on my team fit that description 100%. Yeah, except he's going to wind up losing two, maybe three of them.
Yeah, except they don't stay along very long. That wasn't on his list. That was not number four.
Do you think Tyus Jones comes back next year?
That's what I was going to say. I'm not 100% sold on it after what he did. What more can he do?
Yeah.
Well, it'd be interesting to see where he's projected to go, maybe.
Well, I think his stock has got to have gone up after what he did over the weekend, particularly last night. And by the way, this is one of the great stats I've ever seen coming out of a national championship game. 60 of Duke's 68 points scored by freshmen, including every point in the second half by Duke.
Whoa.
That is a staggering statistic. Yeah. That freshmen took care of all the scoring in the second half and all but 8 points in the game. But you know what? With Krzyzewski, if he lost Tyus Jones, Justice Winslow, and Jahlil Okafor, he'll just reload next year.
Yeah. Well, it's other schools that just have to start copying that one-and-done kind of philosophy. If that's what we're going to. I think the Gophers would love to. Well, yeah.
But they're not going to go there.
That's what Calipari's doing.
But also, you got to recognize that every single player playing for a college team is a rented player.
Yeah, for some period of time.
Do you get them for 1 year or 4 years? That's it.
Again, I still have this illusion that maybe they actually go to school and learn something, but I got to get over that. It's not there.
It's not with you.
I know. And seriously, if I was 18 years old and I knew I'm going to make that kind of crazy money in a year or two, do I really care if I learned my history lesson? I mean, you don't.
I got to be honest. Okay, and Tyus is a great kid.
Yeah.
But if I were him and I just led my team and was most outstanding player of the Final Four,
yeah, I'm going to be back in class on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously today it was a travel day, but come on.
Yeah.
I mean, so you can't expect them to get back.
So yours, dad, your yours counselor. What are you saying? Come out?
I don't think he can go wrong either way. I think he'll have a success. He'll have a great career. If you have the kind of talent he does and these other players,
yeah,
you can stay in college. But if you want to get a degree down the road, you can.
Right, do it later.
I mean, any one of them, like Tyus, there's no doubt he could have a career in broadcasting. We had him on a number of times last year. The kid is, I mean, he could lay out, he's already just really good. He understands the game, and what he could do is relay it. He doesn't stumble. He was good last night when he talked. He said the right things.
Right.
He'll have a career in broadcasting if he wants it. There's no doubt. So his career is set.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's another topic we'll talk about another day, is the percentage of professional athletes that are bankrupt within 3 years.
Oh, there's a lot of them.
And so, like I said, maybe
I don't think he'll be one of them.
Maybe as a parent or as a counselor, you say, okay, here's the deal. You go pro, whatever sport or whatever person we're talking about, you go pro, but you got to start to get some financial planning, education,
you got to do something.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. We're with Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense. When we get back, we will talk to Jim Suhan. He went from Detroit, where the Twins played yesterday and lost their opener, en route, and if not there already, to Augusta for the Masters. That's one heck of a week he's having.
Good gig.
I'm just surprised he didn't go from the game in Detroit to Indianapolis for the championship game. And then, I actually did that 1 year. I went from the Twins opener in Milwaukee and got back to cover when the Final Four was here to cover the championship game.
And stayed awake.
That was fun. I had it was tight, but I made it. We'll be right back with Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Looking forward to talking to Jim in a moment. Joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. That's where you want to go to catch Jim's podcast. And Jim, I got to say, start right off. Where are you? Are you in Augusta or en route?
No, I got to the course about 2 hours ago. So I took a walk down the Race Creek, walked around a little bit, and I'm back up in the press center now.
What kind of temperatures you got there, Jim?
You know, it's about 75. It rained a little earlier, and then the sun came out, so it's 75. Feels like about 95. It's a little steamy right now.
That's impressive, though. You were in Detroit yesterday, there today, and so you left. Well, let me ask this: did you leave last night? Or did you leave this morning?
No, I left this morning.
Okay, so you saw the championship game.
Yes, I did. Quite a game, and it's too bad we don't see more than 4 college basketball games like that a year, because college basketball generally stinks, but the Final Four games were pretty good.
How about that Minnesota kid? My God, the way he took over the game.
Well, it's funny, because the first time I ever saw him was at Apple Valley High School when he was an 8th grader. A friend of mine took me to see him. And I just went as a fan and, you know, sat in the second row, watched him play. And the amazing thing is he played last night exactly like he played as an 8th grader running a varsity team, where he distributed the ball early, handled the ball, he was kind of the composed guy on the floor. And then when they needed, and just, you know, I remember in the 8th grade game, you know, the game when he was an 8th grader, I remember thinking, okay, man, he can really handle it. He really hits the open man. He's got great vision, but can he shoot? He just hasn't shot yet. And then when his team fell below, you know, down by 10 points, he started putting up threes and making them. He said, yep, he can shoot. He just doesn't always shoot. I mean, he played last night just the way I'd seen him play before in high school.
And that's why we had Zach Gorigon, his coach at Apple Valley, what he said, I saw that from Tyus in many small gyms throughout his high school career. But what he did is he had a job as a point guard. Jahlil Okafor and Justice Winslow, when they're on the court, he basically is making them look even better. But when they were off the court in foul trouble, that's when he took over the game. And that Grayson Allen, you can't in any way diminish what this kid did, the way he came off the bench and got him going early in the second half.
It'll be really interesting to see how long Jones and Allen stay in school, because if they want to play 4 years together, they could win a bunch of championships. That's a remarkable duo there. And it is, you know, watching the Final Four, to me, a lot of, I don't know if scouts would agree with me, but just my eyeball on it, I don't like a lot of players change their draft stock in the fit. I think you have to think even more highly of Tyus Jones than the other.
Absolutely.
I think Okafor showed some real flaws and some real inexperience, not being able to finish around the rim even when he was given the chance. I think Winslow did a lot for his stock. And I think Comiskey's got a chance to be a kind of a sneak.
Well, I think all I don't know if there was much doubt. Tyus, well, obviously he, I think he did move himself up certainly into the, you know, in the lottery, and it's not going to be a top three or five pick, but no. I think he could wind up in the top 10, because if you need a point guard after what he did, why would you not look at him? You know, the height, I don't think that's going to be an issue for him in the pros.
Jim? Well, you know, let's face it, they are two different games, and the question is, you know, how would Tyus handle a bigger, more athletic defender who's in his face? Would he able to get his shot off? Would he able to defend people? You know, and to me, the most favorable comparison you can make is he reminds you a little bit of Steph Curry, the way Steph Curry played in college, where we ask the same question. Steph Curry is a very, very small, skinny guy. And you wonder, how's that body going to hold up in the NBA? But he's so skilled, it doesn't matter that he's not big. He can always get a shot off. He can be creative around the rim. He can play like a point guard whenever he wants to. That's probably Tyus' role model right there.
Well, and I don't think Tyus, I mean, he's not just a good college player, because he lifted his game. I do think he'll be a good pro, but the question does come down to, well, of the three, I think he's the likeliest to stay in school, but I don't think that's a slam dunk either. Because he and Okafor, they made a decision as juniors that they were going to go to the same college. Clearly, Okafor is not staying. So
right. Yeah, Okafor will go, and I'd be really interested to see whether he can develop. Now listen, he's still young. He's a freshman. We should, you know, Shaquille O'Neal had his flaws as a freshman in college too, and you know, he got the NBA, just dominated everything. But Okafor has some work to do. Towns, I really like the way he played. I almost like Towns more than I like Okafor at this point. And you know, Cauley Stein, I think, would be a nice defensive role player for somebody.
Well, and Towns is the one that was intriguing, particularly what he did against Notre Dame, where they just could not stop him. You know, once he got the ball inside.
And if Calipari hadn't been outcoached by a measure of 100-fold against Bo Ryan, Towns could have dominated Wisconsin too. Kaminsky didn't stop Towns. They didn't get the ball to Towns often enough.
Yeah, it was. I am. You know what you said before is very interesting. If this will affect Okafor, that he does is not the first overall pick, which he was presumed to be that. But who moves ahead of him?
Towns. That's a lot of the talk today has been the Towns.
Yeah.
Maybe Towns. And you know, listen, it's easy to take the big guy. Everybody wants a big guy. But, you know, D'Angelo Russell is going to be an immediate impact player because he's already got NBA skills. So, you know, if you take Okafor, you might be looking at having to work with him for a while to get him up to speed, where I think Russell is going to play the NBA game really well immediately.
Well, certainly what Kaminsky did is he forced them into those fouls because he just maybe it could have, maybe because it was a championship game, he just was, you know, he was so geeked up it had something to do with it. He's certainly not going to be able to do that through every NBA game, but there's still talent there. I am the one I'm most intrigued by, though, is Tyus, if he comes out where he winds up going, because that's intriguing and interesting.
I know. The thing is, the league is loaded with fifth point guards right now. It is loaded with fifth point guards. But, you know, if Ricky Rubio is not a big, strong guy, but he plays defense hard. He knows how to lead a team. You know, the only question with him is health and shooting. Ty's already a better shooter than Ricky. He's as good a leader. He can run a team as well. He's not quite as tall. That's one thing about Rubio. Rubio's got a little bit of height and a little bit of reach that makes him a pretty effective defender. Ty's going to have to make up for that with quickness. But, yeah, you're right. Nobody who doesn't need a point guard is going to take. This is not going to be a best player available situation. People aren't going to take Tyus unless they absolutely need a point guard.
Jim, we were talking about this. If you were his advisor, would you tell Tyus stay in another year or come out?
I'd tell him to stay in. I think a little more physical strength. Another year of being coached by Krzyzewski, who's done really good work with the USA basketball and knows how to get players ready for the pros. Even though a lot of Dukies end up not being great NBA players, I don't think it's because of Krzyzewski coaching. I think I'd like to see him get a little more experience, a little more strength, maybe even win without Okafor around, who kind of makes things easy. And, you know, he's going to make his money, you know, and this isn't a football situation where one concussion or one knee injury and, you know, it sets him way back. No matter what happens, he's going to be very coveted next year. So if his family isn't in a financial hardship situation where they just need the money right now, I would say stay in.
I also think that this group of kids, particularly him, will ask Krzyzewski, and that will weigh heavily on his decision. And I think Krzyzewski will be honest with him.
Wow.
I mean, obviously, he'd love for him to stick around, but I think he's going to tell him the right thing to do. I don't think he goes wrong either way.
That's become part of the recruiting pitch for college coaches is, you know, that, hey, we're not going to hold, I won't hold you back if I think you're ready for the pros.
Yep. Now, Jim, tell us what, have you had a chance, or you've been so busy, will you be doing any podcast for SuhanUnfiltered.com from Augusta?
We're still figuring out the logistics, to be honest with you. So I'm kind of on hold on a couple of things, but I'll let you know when I know.
All right, but keep checking the Star Tribune out. Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. He'll be writing from Augusta all week. Looking forward to that, Jim. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, take care. Talk to you tomorrow. Marsh Hallberg, Hallberg Criminal Defense. Take a quick break. We come back with our hockey expert, and
Mr.
he's got
California.
A lot to tell us about that Wild team of his. Jack Jablonski coming up next.
Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show. Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
We keep Hellboy for nothing else than music. That's okay.
He's getting better, isn't he?
I like the music he's picking.
Well, let's ask our guest if he likes it. Our guest, Jack Jablonski. Jack, you okay with that music?
I can handle it.
Well, that's diplomatic of you.
Yeah, the music
sucks, but okay, we like it.
They can handle it. I'll take it. That's good enough.
Speaking of sucks, Jack, your Wild team, 3 losses in a row. What's going
on?
Dude,
what's wrong?
Oh, it's nothing to be nervous about.
Hey, they're only
you
2 up.
Playing Chicago tonight.
They're 2 up on Winnipeg, who beat them last night. Shut them out.
I know. I understand that.
So you have no doubt they're going to wind up, they'll still make the playoffs.
Yeah, tonight there's obviously a lot on the line. Beating Chicago in regulation, they can clinch the playoffs. And Chicago's obviously got a lot on the line, too, when it comes to where they want to be seated. So there's no doubt both teams will be playing, but with the opportunity of Zucker possibly being back and Richards being out for Chicago, there's a lot on the line, as you said, and it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds.
That's a diplomatic way of saying they're going to lose tonight, Jack.
I'd love for them to win.
They're going to lose tonight.
I'm confident in that. I think the Wild match up well.
Here's the problem that they do face. Talking to Jack Jablonski with Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense. None of the teams they're facing can coast and say, we're, you know, because St. Louis atop the Central Division, 105 points. Nashville's at 104. Chicago's at 102. All of them want to, you know, St. Louis wants to wind up getting the top seed, and they're only 2 behind Anaheim in the Western Conference. So no one is going to be coasting and, you know, and just cruising into the playoffs knowing where they're going to be. That's a tough situation. And they have Chicago, Nashville, and St. Louis in that order tonight, Thursday night, and Saturday night to close out this regular season.
So you're exactly right. You're exactly right. And as you said, with no one coasting in, all these games are going to be tight. You know, no one's going to be a healthy scratch just to get a breather on ice time. And that's the thing that the NHL has done so well in promoting the hockey of making games that mean something at the end of the season. That being said, for the Wild is, you know, I'm not too concerned because if you look at Chicago, the Wild match up well against Chicago. With Kane out, you know, they take a lot of scoring away.
Yep.
And the opportunity to get some feedback in the lineup with Zucker possibly is a good situation. And you go to St. Louis, and St. Louis is a team that we haven't necessarily played great against in the past few years, but we've done well this year, and we beat them last game. And then you go to Nashville, and Nashville we've handled pretty well. So there's a good opportunity that I think we end up with hopefully at least 4 of the 6 points and a clinch division spot hopefully tonight.
Now, what about your adopted team, the LA Kings? They're both at 93 points. They in Calgary for the 3rd spot in the Pacific Division, and we'll still go with the assumption that the loser of that does not make the postseason. It could, but what's LA got left? Are they in pretty good shape?
LA, yes, they are in good
shape. They play Calgary, right?
They face Calgary, and then they also have the Oilers tonight, and I can't remember who they have to end the season. It might be San Jose, but they have a very favorable schedule in their case, and I think the winner of the Calgary-LA game will be in the playoffs, and the loser will be sitting on the outside looking in when it comes to the playoffs.
So your Wild just have to hope that they, that LA overtakes Calgary, beats them, and then Calgary doesn't make anything, doesn't get in, and it's Minnesota and Winnipeg.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, the West has got, you know, 2 awful teams with Phoenix and Edmonton, so there's a lot of free points in the Western Division, and I think that coming down to the end stretch, you know, with the LA facing the Oilers and San Jose, you got to look at them being favored, especially when it comes to the captain list, Calgary Flames.
Now, Jack, I'm going to switch gears on you. Did you watch the championship game last night?
I did, yes.
Now, explain to people, you saw what Tyus Jones did to Wisconsin. He just lit him up, most outstanding player. Tell people what he did to you when you faced him in baseball.
Oh, well, I think it was unfair, but he struck me out in three pitches when we were about 13 or 14 years old, and he was throwing about 75 miles an hour. So
wow.
I had no chance, but it was a cold day. And
the wind was in your
sun
eyes.
Sun was in your eyes.
Sun was in your eyes.
Yeah, the wind was
in your
eyes.
Face.
It was a cold day, and it was the last out of the game, and the umpire wanted to get out there. So the third pitch was about a foot and a half high, but, you know, I'll give him credit. He obviously deserved to win last night and deserved the award he got yesterday. And props to him. I've talked to him a little bit in the past few years after you guys with 105 The Ticket had been in contact with him and me regarding talking on the radio.
Yep.
And because of that, we've gotten close. We talked a little bit, and you know, I'm happy and proud of him, and hopefully he's got a big decision coming up for next year. So
yep. Now, for a minute there, Jack, I thought I was talking to Bo Ryan with all that bitching about what happened and when you faced him. How about Bo Ryan? How are the Renner players? Hey, he rips the refs. I know that Jack Jablonski wouldn't do that.
No, I wouldn't, but, I mean, I can understand where he's coming from in the sense of the frustration when he believes something doesn't go his way, but, you know, seeing your players struggle through interviews like that and stepping up for him is obviously the right thing to do. I think on ESPN last night, there was one of the analysts kind of compared it to, you know, clicking send before you really think about what you're going to say, and I think that was a good comparison.
Yeah, it is.
It was tough, and he stuck up for the players, and that was one thing that he did right. But obviously, what he said may not have come out the right way, and may not have been exactly what he wanted people to hear.
Now, Jack, we're talking to Jack Jablonski. He's calling from Southern California. He goes to USC. Jack, I think Marsh, would you agree? Marsh Hallberg Criminal Defense. We'd be remiss if we didn't ask Jack. Are you calling from the beach again?
No, I'm not at the beach today.
You're outside in your courtyard, taking the sun in? Okay.
Well, what, 85 degrees, I suppose?
It's supposed to rain later today.
Be horrible.
I know. I'm in like a light sweatshirt, and it's about 65 degrees, so you guys can feel bad for me.
Well, you only need, like, what is it, like about 100 trillion gallons of water, I think, to replenish California's water supply, so a little rain will be good.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the worst thing. And then this way you won't get sunburned. You've been wearing that zinc oxide like we told you?
No, but I do wear sunscreen most of the time, and I think I got second-degree sunburn on the tip of my nose.
See? I told you to put the zinc oxide on.
Yeah, but it's okay. I'm okay, guys.
Now, when is the break, Jack, for you? The end of this month?
Spring break?
Yes. Yeah, no, the school, when it's over.
School? Oh, okay, yeah. School is done at the first week of May. End of first week of May.
Okay, and you'll be coming home, or are you going to stay there?
I'll be coming home in that second week. I think my flight is for the 15th, but I think I'll move it up a little bit.
Well, if it is, and if you can get it, we'd love to have you come in.
Come see us, man.
And come into the studio again. That'd be great. Jack,
for sure.
As always, Jack Jablonski, thanks for taking the time. Enjoy the sun. Be careful. Zinc oxide, remember. We will come back. We'll join you tomorrow. Superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson going to be with you until 7. Thank you so much for listening. Come back with us tomorrow. We have a great lineup coming up. We'll talk to one of the Gopher assistant coaches, Matt Limegrover, one of the coordinators. We'll talk to him, and we'll have a lot of fun. We'll be back tomorrow. See you then.
And to the putter's ground. When the man comes around.
Minnesota Sports Radio, 105 The Ticket.